It is 9:30 straight down, and it's time for Food Talk. I'm Marianne Myers, and I'm here with my fabulous co-host, Linda Perkins.
Good morning to you. I've got my apron on, and just by coincidence, it happens to be black, which seems kind of fitting for that accident. They said that there's train cars on the highway.
Yeah. It's very scary. Oh. We'll know more, I'm sure, soon. But for right now, the main thing for all of us here is don't go there.
Yeah.
Don't go anywhere near there.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
How are you doing for your Christmas preparations?
I have no Christmas preparations.
No. Oh, I remember, because all you have to do is iron your pajamas.
That's right. Like I always do, yeah, iron my pajamas.
Make them all fancy for the holiday.
Oh my gosh, yes, I don't do, we don't really do Christmas at my house, so what are you doing?
Well, I ordered my standing rib roast, pretty excited about that.
Wow.
So,
are you having a house full?
I don't think so, not a ton, but it's just such a Christmas thing, you know.
Yeah.
I always order, I forget what it's called, but where they cut the bones off and then they tie them back on, and then I shove a bunch of garlic in that place between the bones and the meat, and then I cook it the way Paula Deen does, where she...
And how is that?
She heats up her oven to 375. So you take your standing rib roast and you just sit it on the counter so that it comes to room temperature at least an hour, and then preheat your oven to 375. I preheat it to 400 because I never follow directions.
maybe that's how your oven works.
I mean,
they're all different, right? I think of that oven setting as a suggestion.
Well, yeah. And then what I do is when I put the meat in there, I turn it down to 375.
Oh, yeah.
But I heat it to 375, get it good and hot, or to 400. And then I use that Montreal steak rub. I like that. I put it all over the meats, make it stick with a little bit of oil. And then a little bit of extra pepper, because I like black pepper.
Yeah, me too.
And then, stick it in the oven. And you stick it in there for an hour. And then you shut your oven off. And you do not open the door for 3 hours.
Ah.
And then, come dinner time, and you time it so that dinner time is about 4 hours and 40 minutes away from when you start. Then you turn it back on, and you leave it on for either 30 or 40 minutes, depending if you want it medium rare or medium.
So when you turn it back on, it's going through its preheat with the meat in there.
Yes.
Right?
So it's not like you heat it up to 375 and then go 40 minutes. You just time from when you turn that dial back to 375.
Okay.
But it works great. It's really foolproof, and it's always really just really well cooked, really tender, really juicy. And I've done some pretty horrible criminal things to standing rib roasts in the past, and short of deep frying a turkey. And this has always just worked really well for me.
And how big a chunk of meat is that?
This time I got a 6-bone, and I've done this method a lot, and I've done experiments with it. If you put a little one in there, so you start that 3-hour period where the oven is off, and at the end, because I'll use a probe thermometer, electronic one, a digital one, and the oven will be pretty low, like 125 degrees. Once that 3 hours is off, because that meat isn't very big. But if you put a big roast in there, then the oven, because of the heat in the roast, is the temperature significantly higher at the end of the 3-hour oven off period.
Uh-huh.
And so I think that's why no matter what size you put in there, it turns out
it works.
Perfect. Yeah.
Wow. That's so incredible.
It's food science.
And also, I agree that it's great to have leftover turkey, but it's really great to have leftover roast beef.
Yeah. There's something about serving that up for breakfast that makes the family feel loved.
Yeah. No kidding. So
guess what we had?
Do you have traditional sides that you do with that?
You know, not really. My big traditional Christmas thing is pickled herring. I'm from Minnesota, which was settled by Scandinavians, Swedes, and I'm not Swedish, but just that culture is what I grew up with.
You're so comfy here.
Yeah, I know. It's just like home. Yeah. There's a river. There's Victorian homes.
And there's pickled herring.
Yeah, exactly.
Are you pickling your own herring?
No, I never have. I've done salmon, but not herring. Have you ever?
No.
Yeah.
Never, but I love that stuff.
Yeah, I do too.
Ooh. With really, dense brown bread and butter.
Yeah. And it's good. There's some Swedish things, though, that are just I do not love, like how they love like really oily, fishy tasting fish and cream sauces. Boy, that just doesn't I'm selective in my Swedish food loves.
You know what I love this time of year, and not strictly Sweden, but Scandinavian, are the cookies.
Yeah. Oh, so buttery,
oh,
so delicious.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
We just got done with the big sale, you know, that big one for the animal shelter.
I know.
And so many
people. You look remarkably, you know, alive.
Really? Yes.
I'm stunned.
Yes. Still can't feel hands. Still can't feel hands. Wow. I got this idea to pipe little borders, little beaded borders around the,
yes,
the
I saw
picture
them.
Cookies. I know.
And how many cookies was that?
Well, there's like 1,700. So towards the end, I was just like, just like moving my arm from the elbow, hoping I was squeezing the right amount because I couldn't feel a thing. Holy
well,
cow.
I don't know if you've... You're not a woman who would have actually learned a lesson from that. You will think you need to do that again next time. Oh my gosh, that they were spectacular.
Aww.
But when I saw you, and I don't even think you were completely done yet.
Yeah.
You could hardly move, so that was crazy. Aww. Anyway, the entire baking community's contribution to that paid off in spades, right?
Yeah, we made a little over $27,000 for the animal shelter, just the bake sale part of the fundraiser. I think the fundraiser made a lot more too. So it was good. That fundraiser makes about half of what they need in a year. So it's very worth doing.
Yeah, it's fabulous. It is fabulous. And there are still people, as we know this morning, who are like, oh, I went to get this thing and it was gone.
Oh, yeah. Somebody was here at the station. How come there wasn't any apple pie?
Because they were gone.
Yeah. You got to.
Yeah. Well,
early bird your butt to that sale.
We need to, next year, we need to start talking about pre-orders, you know, months in advance here on this program, so people don't have to miss out, like is what happens when you wait till the last second. Anyway, so you're doing pickled herring maybe, and what do you do for a starch when you do a standing rib roast?
Usually potatoes. It's usually like roasted garlic mashed potatoes. It's just that's pretty much what I always do. Oh, I found some new potatoes, though. Not anything fancy, but there's, have you seen, they're just little tiny potatoes that are in like this little microwave tray.
Yeah, fresh. I have seen them.
Oh, they're just really, really creamy potatoes, and you just stick them in the microwave. They are so easy. Oh.
Yeah. They are.
I've become lazy, Linda.
Well, you were lazy with an excuse. You'll get over it. You'll get over it. Yeah, potatoes this time of year, I don't know. There's something about it. I think part of it is that it's getting cooler. But the other thing is that potatoes, if you're buying local and fresh, are still available from our local farmers. And they are really good.
Yeah, and they really do taste good when they're fresh.
Oh, man. Yeah, I had some purple cauliflower last
night
from Lana Conscious Farm, and it was A, stunningly gorgeous before and after cooking, and just so delicious. Man.
How did you cook it?
Just roasted, tossed in oil and salt and pepper, and roast in the oven.
Yeah.
You know, broke it into florets.
Yeah.
And it was just delicious.
I did the same thing. I'm not with purple, but just regular regular broccoli instead of cauliflower. So
yeah.
I think it's time for that winter roasting thing that we all do.
And cabbage.
Yeah.
I've been really craving, you know, the cabbage and what do you call the Irish dish that's cabbage and cream potatoes and you know what I'm talking about?
I do, but I don't think I even know the name. I don't think...
I'm going to think of the name before we're done, and I will, like, spit it out in the inappropriately in the middle of a sentence.
Recipe Tourette's. Crumb caca.
Exactly. That's not it.
No, I know. Well, something I love about this time of year is that everybody comes out with their lists of the best cookbooks of the year.
Oh, right.
And, yes. And I love cookbooks. And then pretty soon after that, you know, after the first of the year, then all the nominations for the James Beard Awards and
yes.
the IACP, International Association of Culinary Professional Awards come out. Both those lists I follow. And so I love cookbooks. And when I say I love love cookbooks. I mean, I love cookbooks.
That's right.
And so
you love it in a very tangible, like space intensive way.
Yes, in a kind of unhealthy way, not toxic, just not healthy. And but I do. I just love them. And so then all these lists come out, and I can see if there's cookbooks that I missed, or like last year. Oh, what was it called? Deep Run. Well, there was a cookbook that was the first cookbook this woman, Vivian Howard, had written ever, and it won four, unheard of, four IACP awards. And so I didn't look at it. It wasn't a cookbook anybody who'd ever
Did
written a cookbook before.
Did you know Vivian Howard? Because that doesn't ring a bell to
no,
me.
No, and that's why it was such a feat or such an unusual thing. And that's another reason that I love those lists, just because there's always things I miss and I must see them all.
And possess them.
Yeah, part of the unhealthy part. But yeah, that's exciting. So I know we talk a lot about Andy Catalano's meal kits, but Andy's meal kits are just meal kits in general. You know, they're fast, they're good. And it made me realize that I spend so much of my time thinking about baking, you know, baking, baking, baking. And so I ordered some cookbooks that that aren't baking, that are kind of weeknight cookbook things, weeknight recipe things, which isn't, those aren't cookbooks that I would normally buy, but I just realized I'm in a rut. And I thought it would be like a way to get out. And so I found books that are on everybody's lists, you know, end of the year lists. And I'm kind of excited about that.
So do we know what they are?
Well, there's, you know, Food 52. I really like that blog a lot.
Yes.
And they have a Mighty Salads, dinner salads. And we really like dinner salads, so I got that one. And then I got one from Melissa Clark called Dinner Changing the Game. And I'm excited about that one, too. Just so those are, that's just,
cool.
I got some others, too.
I am guilty of having purchased a couple more cookbooks. And I do have this sort of unwritten law that if there's no more room on the cookbook bookshelves, that I have to get rid of one if I get another one. But now I've discovered quite surprisingly that they're like kind of stacked on top of each other on top of the books that fit in the bookcase. So I guess I have no excuse. But I will say that I use them more because of Eat Your Books.
Oh, yeah,
And every time we talk about Eat Your Books, somebody calls after the show and says, now, what was that website?
It's true.
So we're going to tell you right now, eatyourbooks.com. Go there and find out. But it is a free way to organize your cookbook library so that you can search through all of your cookbooks without having to pull them all off the shelf and look through the index. You can just say, I want a recipe for potatoes, or you could say, I want a definite recipe for something, and it will pull up all of your cookbooks that have that in them.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes it so that your library is really accessible and you use books that you might not have cracked open.
That's just perfect. It's an index for your entire cookbook library, and it includes the magazines that you buy.
Yes.
And it also includes the blogs online that you read. So, like, I love Serious Eats. I love Food 52. So I have those on my Eat Your Books, and Eat Your Books is free. They have a thing you can buy, too, but the free one is really good.
It's great.
Yeah, and then same thing with your magazines, and same thing with your books. It's just great.
Yeah, it is. And it actually, at least for me, it is a way to justify the fact that I have too many cookbooks, because now I can actually use them.
It's one big book.
It's just a huge book, a huge, big, really heavy book. I need to remind everybody, I get to remind everybody, that they're listening to Coast Community Radio, KMUN 91.9 FM, Astoria, Oregon, and KTCB 89.5 FM, Tillamook, Oregon. This is Food Talk. I'm Marianne Myers, and I'm here with, as always, with Linda Perkins. And Food Talk is a co-production of Coast Community Radio and the North Coast Food Web.
We were talking last week, or last time we were on the air a couple weeks ago, about what it takes to become a good cook and what it takes to find recipes and have recipes that you love and then make them your own. And I don't think it's a super easy thing to do. I mean, I don't think it's hard, like maybe brain surgery, but I think that it takes perseverance, you know, that you have to decide. We were using the example of Devil's Food Cake last week.
Oh,
Yeah. And so somebody called right after the show, and I don't think that they're one of our seven core listeners.
I think we actually get to add Pam to our list.
Yeah, I think maybe one of the four fringe listeners. But we're up to
Thank
11.
You, Pam.
We're up to 11. But she had a recipe for devil's food cake, and she made the cake and brought it in. Which is really awesome. And we tried it, and it was good. It was good chocolate cake. Really, really good. The texture was good. The flavor was good. But that's now this is such an example of the things where you want to make something your own. What I want is I want a screamingly dark, oily, moist cake. That's what I want. And that's how I think of devil's food, is different than chocolate cake. And so for Pam, what is a good devil's food cake is to me a good chocolate cake. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And I think
that recipe was out of a Silver Palette book.
Their Basics one, or I forget what it's called.
Basics.
The other one.
New Basics.
Yeah.
It's, you know, Basics review.
And it was a really good chocolate cake.
Yes, very good.
Yeah. Thank you, Pam.
Thank you so much. That was I think that Pam really has moved into official fandom because that was a call.
That's
to
true.
Action
a very that, kind thing to do.
Yes.
So we would have 8 core listeners and then 3 fringe listeners now.
Yes.
Awesome.
I know.
So we
but
haven't
you
exactly.
Notice those are lateral moves.
Yeah.
You may have noticed.
We probably aren't going to have any paid advertisers yet.
Well, that and the whole pesky, public radio thing.
Yeah. But. Oh, dang it. I keep forgetting. We're not nationally syndicated yet. Well, I think it is a hard thing to learn how to be a good cook. And I stumbled on something on the internet that made me laugh until I was like spitting up blood. And it was some kid who was trying to, and by kid, he was probably 45. Good Lord. But anyway, some guy who was trying to teach a robot to be a good cook. So it wasn't a robot. It was like a neural network. So it was like a robot brain.
Yeah.
And so he wanted to see what it takes to make a thinking, if it is thinking, machine be an intuitive cook, to understand how recipes work and how cooking works. And so he fed that robot brain. He fed that neural network 30 megabytes of...
Whoa.
Yeah. So what's that, like 6 million words? I mean, a lot of recipes.
It was more than my brain holds.
Yes. Way more than we can say in this half hour. But he fed it like 30 megabytes of recipe information. And he was trying to show it patterns and teach it how to cook. And if somebody threw a hot dog at it, know what to do with it in the kitchen. And anyway, so he said that... he trained the neural network on all these cookbook recipes, but its cooking advice didn't seem to be that great. So he said, I'm not sure I should do or add any of these things. These are things that the robot was adding to its own recipes when it was given some ingredient.
Okay.
A cup of cherry seeds, 42 cups of milk. One time it said to preheat the oven to 3,500 degrees for 8 minutes. Good thing that I had the 8 minutes. Beat the gelatins until firm. Brown the egg yolks until smooth. I love this one. Fold water. Roll into small cubes. And then one said to sprout the clams and add vanilla. And my favorite one is to add 1 cup of meat or flour. And can you imagine just thinking? And it should make you all feel very, very good about where you are in learning to be good cooks, because I can guarantee that you are a better cook than that robot, that you have never sat at the stove with a spoon in your hand in the air thinking, this needs something, meat or flour.
Or maybe a nice cube of water.
Yes,
you never know.
Yes.
A cube of water would be good.
Roll it into a cube of water.
It reminds me of the Napa grade school cookbook that they do every year.
Oh, yes.
And as tradition dictates at Thanksgiving dinner, when you go to David and Lisa's, that new cookbook every year gets passed around the table. We take turns reading a recipe from
the
kids.
It is the best tradition, isn't it?
And actually, the kids have better advice than that, even though it's interesting.
I love the one this year that said, get a turkey, make it unalive.
Oh, my God.
Make it unalive.
Well, you have to start somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, when you said that you like pepper, I really like pepper, and I really like black pepper, and I don't even bother with white pepper at my house. If a recipe calls for white pepper, I use black pepper. I don't care. But, I mean, I don't care if I see the little specks. Mm-hmm. But I have recently decided that I don't need to pick up my pepper mill and go grindy, grindy, grindy over everything. I just need to grind a bunch of black pepper and have it in a little ramekin and be able to pick up a pinch like I do salt. Mm-hmm. Because I like pepper, and I want an amount that isn't like, I don't want to stand there for 30 grinds.
Yeah.
And interestingly, you know, watching professional cooks on TV or reading a recipe that always just says salt and pepper to taste, which is the best advice.
Mm-hmm. But it's hard when you're learning how to cook.
Yes. And that pepper grinder, just, it's great for garnishing what's on your plate, but it is completely, in my estimation, not the thing to do when you're trying to actually create a recipe.
I completely agree. And I it took me so long to even come to that realization because I didn't like the amount of time it took me to grind enough pepper into something. So my solution is not to grind it ahead of time. Oh no, that's too right. I bought an electric one so I could have one hand going on the pepper mill and have the other one stirring so everything wasn't burning, you know.
Yeah.
And still that took too long. And yeah, finally I even just bought the pepper ground because and I should just grind a bunch. I have like 4 coffee grinders that are dedicated to spices.
Yeah.
And I should just do that. And it's funny that you say that because I do that with garlic. I buy a 3-pound tub of peeled garlic and I run it through the food processor and I put it in quart bags real flat in the freezer. And if I want garlic, I don't grind it every day because I use it practically every day. I just break off a little piece of frozen garlic and
then
toss
you're not
it in there.
Mincing.
Yep, I'm not mincing every day. And then now I am following your advice. I am not grinding garlic every day or grinding pepper every day.
Yeah, no, I like having that little ramekin of ground pepper and be able to grab some. Or even if you're doing a recipe where it says, and you want to follow the recipe, and it says 1/2 teaspoon of pepper, you just dip your spoon in there.
Yeah.
It's so much easier. I don't know why we got sidetracked on having to grind pepper in the kitchen and not just at the table, but I think I blame Bobby Flay and all of them at all.
Oh, I blame them for everything.
Yeah.
Oh, those celebrity chefs.
I know. And you know.
And their bake sales that make twice what ours does. I'm bitter.
That is annoying. Well, I am interested to see what happens with James Baird Awards this year in the face of all of the scandal amongst
I know.
The celebrity chefs community. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Pretty interesting.
Yeah.
So you and I went to the fundraiser dinner for the food bank.
Yes, Clatsop Community Action Food Bank, the regional food bank that supplies everybody in our county.
Yeah, it's an amazing food bank. They put out so much fresh food, so much game and fish and game. Really an amazing place. And I will always support them no matter what. But they have a very fancy dinner every year. And they cook for days for it. And it was just absolutely delicious. This year they had a vegan dish with Brussels sprout leaves. And it was so good. And so they always send you home at the end of the night with a packet of recipes. And that thing, I mean, it was just superlatively delicious. It was so good. I don't even know if that's a word. And I got home and my recipe packet had so many things that I didn't recognize as eating. And I realized that it was like such a hard thing to make that they'd taken like 6 or 7 regular recipes and like did separate recipes on separate parts of it and then combined it all. I'm like, I don't understand when.
I haven't even opened my packet
yet.
Oh,
yeah. I think it was really hard. But oh, man, it was good. It had pomegranate seeds and it was so good.
That is Chef Bob Neroni and Josh Archibald. In Cannon Beach do that dinner every year.
Yeah, it was really something. I have a friend, Lorna, and she volunteers, like, you know, it's all volunteer.
Yeah.
And she helps with the cooking. And she said one day, the whole entire day, she was just peeling garlic and then taking that little I don't know what you call it, germ nubbin out of it. And
yeah, yeah, the little root.
And then she was like having nightmares about garlic germ nubbins for like a week after.
Oh, man, if you do it all day long, you better hope you wore gloves. Otherwise, when you wake, you know, you roll over in the night and it's like, whew, still
there. That's so funny because the bake sale, like the last week when it's really, really cookie intensive, you know, like exactly that. I'll roll over at night and I'm like it smells like butter underneath my fingernails. That's so sad.
Well, it could smell like worse things.
Yeah, I know.
Cookies.
Butter.
Man. Oh, well, the holidays being upon us and then soon gone, we're going to be back to cooking regularly for, you know, our households.
Yeah.
There won't be all of those special occasions anymore.
Yeah.
Which I, you know, glad to see them come, glad to see them go, kind of like company.
Yes.
So, it'll be okay. But I don't even know what I'm going to do for Christmas. It's just the two of us, and we decline all generous invitations from wonderful friends and just take a bye on Christmas. It's often just a pajama day.
Yeah, I think that's so cool.
I might just roast a chicken. I like leftover roast chicken a lot. So I don't know. I haven't even I have not committed. Maybe we'll have those hot dogs that the robot.
With some cubed water.
Yeah.
I guess we do have cubed water, but I mean, we don't really use it in cooking that much.
And we hardly ever roll it first.
No. No.
Oh, my gosh. I can only just imagine how much time this researcher put into
entering all those recipes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, but that's kind of a little bit of a hubris thing. Oh, you know, I can't imagine. Well, maybe he does, but you know that he's like a great cook, you know, and just I'll enter a bunch of information and it'll know how to cook, and it takes a lot more, and it is such a personal thing to learn how to cook, because it's not learning how to cook, it's learning to make things like you like them.
Yep. So in that way, it's very much like jazz. It's improvisational, mm-hmm. and I don't know how you that is not a you know, a hardware kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. That's perfect.
The hardware is the equipment, the knife, the cutting board, the saute pan, and maybe a cookbook, but the software is everything, mm-hmm. you know, and that's in us. So in our preferences and also in our creativity. And so I don't see how you could, those of us who grew up cooking, grew up standing next to a loved one who cooked, you know, and just absorbing that joy for one thing.
And my grandma, my paternal grandma was such a good cook that, I mean, it's not that you couldn't learn from her, but you couldn't recreate what she made, because with baking, she would just dump a bunch of flour in a bowl and then she'd, you know, dump some water in there and some yeast and some salt and a couple eggs and, you know, some milk and butter and she would make something, but nothing was measured.
And isn't that really remarkable, because we think of baking, excuse me, as being a very exact science, mm-hmm. as opposed to just cooking.
Yes.
Where everything has to be precise. But
yes,
look
and
at that.
Leveled off. And yeah. And when somebody has trouble, you say that, you know, did you use a cup? Yeah. No, you used a cup as a scoop. That's not a cup. That's a scoop.
I know. Pat Milliman from Pat's
Pantry.
The spice shop here in Astoria talks about her, I think it was her grandmother, her pie crust, which always was really shaggy and kind of disreputable looking, and got put in a pie plate and made into the most fabulous pie crust. I mean, there is no, you got to do it this way. There mm-hmm. really isn't. Mm-hmm. You know, if it comes out beautiful, then you just try to recreate it.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Same thing. Who's that Rosemary? Rose Levy Birnbaum, however you say her name, she wrote the cake Bible. She has a pastry book, and her pie crust is so dry and shaggy, and you're like, how is this even going to hold together? And it's delicious.
Yep. I don't know. You got to do it. I think that's the thing about cooking together, mm-hmm. is that even if you cook a lot, when you get to cook with other people, mm-hmm. you learn so much from each other, not just useful tips and systems, but also just the inspiration that other people bring to it that you might not have thought mm-hmm. of. So I wish we had a kitchen that had 150 workstations.
Oh, no, you don't.
Oh, I don't want to be the dishwasher, but I want the kitchen.
There'd always be somebody cutting off a finger.
I don't know. I teach, we teach 8 and 10-year-olds with knives. And yes, we go through Band-Aids, but so far we have not lost a digit.
Yay!